This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stachow. The Asheville Police Department may have hit another bump on their road to gain trust in the Black community. A new investigation documents the department's efforts to gather intelligence on civil rights groups in the aftermath of a fatal police shooting and ensuing racial tension. Experts say this kind of monitoring is not unheard of, but may undermine public trust. This revelation comes months after a video leaked of an Asheville police officer punching and choking a Black man accused of jaywalking. The officer was arrested and later indicted. Joel Burgess broke both of these stories. He is the city government reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. Thanks so much for being here, Joel.
Good to be here.
So tell me, Asheville police have admitted to monitoring civil rights groups. Who were they monitoring, and what do we know about why?
Through a series of questions and some back-and-forth emails with the Asheville Police Department, they acknowledged that they had launched an intelligence-gathering operation into Black Lives Matter and another group called Showing Up for Racial Justice.
And do we know why they were being monitored? Were there particular threats made to cause this investigation?
That's right. So this dates back to July 2nd, 2016. There was an officer who shot a Black man named Jerry Williams. The shooting was eventually ruled justified by the district attorney, but it set off a very tense summer with a series of protests that peaked, you could say, with a unpermitted downtown march where police said that protesters banged on cars and blocked roadways. Demonstrators eventually hung a banner on the side of the police department that said Black Lives Matter and actually went inside, and there was a sit-in, an overnight sit-in, and eight people were arrested. Sometime after that shooting, during a lot of these protests and demonstrations, police say that there were threats made against officers. Again, this is a piece of information that we got out of them through a series of questions. That's really all we know about the threats. Police have declined to offer any other information. We've asked in a lot of different ways, but that having that bit of information, learning of the threats, is what caused the police chief, Tammy Hooper, to launch this intelligence gathering operation, according to what we've learned.
So I know there's an important clarification to be made here between intelligence gathering and criminal investigation. There's a distinction there. Can you clarify that and how it fits into what was happening in Asheville?
Yeah, I can to some degree clarify it. A criminal investigation. Let's start with the intelligence gathering. Essentially, according to the APD, the Asheville Police Department's own policies, they can start this type of intelligence gathering. They can start some kind of monitoring if they have a reasonable suspicion that a group may be engaging in some kind of criminal activity or planning some kind of criminal activity. You could use information from intelligence gathering then to actually launch a full-fledged criminal investigation. A criminal investigation, of course, would have to have a higher degree of certainty that crime was actually taking place, because a criminal investigation, by its nature, is to either prevent a crime or to solve a crime. So it's confusing, but I think people can sort of see how those play into each other. There also are probably some very bright lines and maybe some sort of fuzzy lines that could be crossed in terms of what can be done in one but not the other.
So there are sort of clear rules about sort of what kind of information can be kept and tracked, how long it's able to be sort of in the hands of the police department. Tell me a little bit about what we know about the use of these kinds of intelligence gathering practices. I know you spoke with a variety of experts. Is this something that is common?
That's really interesting. I spoke with some former New York City police officers, high-ranking officers, actually, and one who had worked undercover. And he said that, yeah, they're probably more common than most people would think. And what we're talking about is maybe not the kind of deep undercover operation that might get glamorized in some police television show, but intelligence gathering, though, where officers officially have opened some kind of action, some kind of operation into groups, and they will monitor them in different ways. They'll look at social media. In the case of Asheville Police, they told us that they, along with monitoring social media, they went to what they call open meetings or open events. We asked police if, in attending those events, officers wore uniforms. Did they make it obvious that they were police? And they declined to answer. We asked if this was done in an open fashion and not an undercover fashion, why wouldn't the police just simply tell us? And they declined to answer. And it's hard not to read between those lines and believe that this may have been done in an undercover fashion. And you ask about legal experts and other experts, and yes, they say that it probably happens more often than we know. It gets sticky and touchy, though, when you involve groups whose stated goal is peaceful social change, particularly in terms of civil rights groups. And some of that is because of the history that the government has of monitoring, infiltrating, and I think you could arguably use the word spying on civil rights groups in the 60s and 70s.
So, right, this is obviously, some activists are saying, you know, this harkens back to a time when civil rights groups were watched closely by the FBI and the police. What are activists in Asheville saying about being monitored? What have you heard?
I think they were surprised. They were surprised to hear that the monitoring happened in the way in which we believe it happened. They said that both representatives for Showing Up for Racial Justice and Black Lives Matter said that they knew of no threats that had been issued by anyone in the groups. They said that they have no intent or desire to harm police. They also said, and it's worth noting, that they never saw uniformed police or anyone who identified themselves as police officers at their meetings. And this, again, is leading us to look toward the potential for an undercover investigation into these groups.
So I know you haven't had the opportunity to have a sit-down conversation with the chief about this, but do we know if a criminal investigation has been launched or how the data that has been collected is being used at this point?
So very good questions. And again, yes, we actually requested an interview with Police Chief Tammy Hooper, and she said that they would only answer, city officials would only answer via written emails. And a lot of those emails came from the spokeswoman for the department, Christina Hollingsey. And Hollingsey, in declining to answer a lot of our questions, including the ones, the very good ones that you just asked about what happened with this investigation, did it end, where's the information, cited state public records law that tells us that a lot of things are public records, but some things that are exempted are records of criminal investigations and records of intelligence gathering. Criminal intelligence gathering is actually, I think, the phrase that is used in the statute. Now, talking to the North Carolina Press Association, they say, the attorneys for the North Carolina Press Association say that nondisclosure isn't mandatory. In other words, police don't have to give this information, but they can if they want to. And they've declined to so far. They've declined to tell us to confirm that the intelligence gathering has actually ended. In talking about it, they said that it happened in July and August. It sounds like they mean that it ended in August, but it's hard to know exactly. We don't know if it turned into a full-fledged criminal investigation.
So let's talk a little bit about Chief Tammy Hooper with the time that we have left. I know she recently fired the second police captain in a few months. Can you tell us a little bit about what is going on internally in the department and the chief's role?
It gives a sense that there's some turmoil, at least in the upper ranks. There was, as you said, just in the past few days, she's fired a captain named Mark Byrd, who was there about 20 years. Prior to that, in May, she fired a captain who was in charge of criminal investigations, arguably the most important division in any police department, and his name was Stoney Gauntz. In both cases, there was accusations that they had not been truthful about certain things. One very interesting tie to both firings was ways in which she said these captains either interfered or were not truthful about a police beating that happened, and you referenced it in our opening segment, toward the end of August. And this, as many people may have heard, it was an officer named Christopher Hickman who, along with another officer, stopped a black unarmed pedestrian named Johnny Rush. The stop escalated, and the pedestrian ended up being beaten, shocked, and choked, according to police body cam video, which we had. And she has linked both of these captains to the way in which either the investigation was done or sort of statements made in the wake of it. And she, I think she is saying with Byrd that he has been attempting to undermine her as the chief in statements that he's made about her handling of the case.
Well, thanks so much for your reporting. We will continue to follow your work. Joel Burgess is the city government reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. Thanks so much for the update.
So good to be here.
Just ahead, we will hear the stories of the researchers, advocates, and clinicians who were working in the early days of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.